Now, Jurassic Park 4, like there was a big gap, a huge gap, like 14 years between Jurassic Park 3 and what would eventually become Jurassic World. But in between that time, I know there was a lot of weird scripts and ideas floating around about like castles in the Alps where they would contain dinosaurs or like raptors that jump out of like the ground like a trapdoor spider and attack people just or human dinosaur hybrids. Like, were you part of any of that insanity?
Yeah, that sounds horrible. Not those far-reaching concepts, but a version of those. I'd never heard of Colin Trevorrow or let alone work with him until I forget how it came about that I was on that one and or got on Jurassic World, but it was very very much in flux, kind of in a way. We're pretty much everybody who worked on it knew this really needs something. This needs a kick in the butt, or it needs to really find a form and find a story. And it was pretty lumpy gravy. The whole what was there as a story, as an outline, and yet it was ready to go. It was there. It was like the somebody's foot was right over the gas pedal, ready to just poof, hit the gas, because the light would go green as soon as Steven said go or whatever. And what's the actor's name, the hero actor guy, Chris Pratt?
Yeah, Chris Pratt,
He
yeah.
was I think he was like special forces dude, and it opens in a jungle, and you realize, I forget how we reveal it, that it's Chris Pratt and other like secret agent DEA, FBI, CIA, WO, whatever, every kind of wet works, black ops, bologna sausage, all rolled into one. And you think you're in the jungle with raptors, and then you realize you're in the South American jungle, and the raptors have cameras on their head or something, or on their chest, or light bulbs in their nose or something, and they're lurking through the jungle to take out a drug lord in some fortress in the jungle in South America or whatever. It's like what?
So that was the original like story. That's
They're doing what?
yeah.
They're gonna what?
Yeah,
You know,
weird.
Raptor Alpha team, the A team, the R team, because they're raptors. Arr. Like that. It was stuff in that other stuff like that. And it's like, oh my God.
Whole idea of like the new park, was such a fun idea, and I'm so glad they did that as a movie. Have a fully realized version of Jurassic Park finally, with people visiting it and everything. And you did some really cool like attractions in some of your storyboards, like a Brachiosaur Valley with the viewing pods, and like a little railing on a submarine that goes into a lake with the marine reptiles. I mean, I really wish some of that had been kept in the final movie, because it's some really cool ideas.
Yeah, again, it's like you said, it's you got 120, 130 minutes to get it all in. So it's a lot of swapping of Lego parts. There needed to be a tightening of elements. And Colin had brought his right hand man, a friend,
I think his name was Derek Connolly.
Derek Connolly, right?
Yeah.
His writer friend. And I think they went to film school together or whatever, and they did his Colin had done a pretty cute movie.
Safety not guaranteed.
Yeah, that was it. Right.
Yeah, I saw that actually at a theater before he was even attached to Jurassic World, and I was like, wow, that was a really good movie. And then suddenly he became part of that.
It was very nicely done and done on the cheap and made a ton of money, you know. And that always appeals to studios, and it could obviously pull it off, because he did a lot with little, and that appeals to studios too. And so he and Derek wrote up an outline, and meanwhile we started out by drawing this elements of this other outline. Colin and Derek fleshed out what became the movie pretty much, and it was great. It was tight and it was great. And I don't recall if the pitch to Steven in the studio involved storyboards at that point, or just concept art and some keyframe type storyboards or what have you. But they pitched that, and that became the show. They pitched their version, and that became the movie. And then it was full tilt boogie storyboarding their outline as they were writing it into a script. And it was really fun. It was good. And Colin Trevorrow, you know, stepped up to the plate in a huge way. I mean, first by sort of chiseling out this story, chiseling out this territory of what the movie would be, and then you know, guiding it through the storyboards in a way. And he'd never taken on something this monumental, this big of a film, and he just took it in stride and really owned it in a great way, you know. And I worked on it for a few months, and then Christmas break was coming, and they kind of were already scouting and securing locations in, you know, around, I guess, Hawaii or places like that, and it was, you know, full green lit, here we go thing. And then the studio or Steven hit the brakes on it and wanted to, you know, give it like what they call, you know, put their eyes on it, or last looks, you know, they call that on the set, you know, before the camera starts rolling, last looks, where wardrobe and makeup and art department, everything, give their last looks of what's in that shot and make sure there's, you know, everything looks pretty. So I think they wanted to do that with the whole story and look at it, because it was a, you know, very good script, very good story. They wanted to look at it in terms of another trilogy, right? They wanted it not to be a standalone, but it's like, this is so good, let's go bigger with it and see where we could go. So we all went home and they did that. And so, you know, in that time off, then I never went back to it. A lot of guys went back, and new guys went back in terms of storyboarding and concept art and all that. But in that kind of Christmas break time, was a little longer than that, a couple months, I got the call from Jon Favreau to do the Jungle Book with him. So, and that was too great of a opportunity to pass up on, because John implemented what the studio, what Disney has really kind of made their MO for that kind of movie, you know, for remaking a classic as a hybrid or as a fully animated, you know, live action kind of movie, like Jungle Book and Lion King and Snow White's being made and Aladdin Aladdin wasn't a hybrid, but Little Mermaid's being made and all those things. But what they adopted from John, and what John started on Jungle Book, and why I just had to do it with him, because it was John, for one, he's awesome. And but he said, I want to do it like Walt did his movies. I want a standalone storyboard department, right? is usually we're part of the art department, and where you take those tables in the corner or you go down the hall, but we're in the art department itself, you know, though we're really not beholden to the production designer. We're drawing the director's vision and not the art department's vision. So, but we are usually lumped in with them. But here with John, he wanted to do it the Walt way, where you had a storyboard department and then you had a separate art department and then production and all the rest. And, you know, and so in that art, that storyboard department, that we, you know, had a 10 guys, eight guys drawing and four or five guys making animatics of the drawing. And so boarded every single second of that movie, and not only boarded it, but made an animatic, like, you know, the days of Walt, you know, doing a story reel of all the drawings and watching it as a film, you know, with scratch dialogue from people around the office and sound effects and stolen music and stuff, but just a very rough version of it. And it's the model that Pixar uses, and Disney feature animation is used since the 30s, you know, and all the animation houses. You make this animatic, a 2D animatic, a story reel of the drawings. And the Pixar motto is, if it works when it's ugly, then it'll work when it's beautiful, you know? So,
yeah, it kind of gives more of a pacing, right? Like, oh, is the pacing right for having this kind of scene take place at this moment of the story? Or should it be moved around, kind of thing?
Yeah, there is that, you know, the element of the whack-a-mole kind of. What I did on Jungle Book and Lion King was to break it up. Like, I worked on, that was another thing in that Lost World era. When we wrapped Lost World, I had seen, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg around the set a lot, and in those meetings of the studio design and whatnot, and I'd always wanted to try feature animation. I'd worked in television animation, but that's a whole different animal, and not as robust or as fun as feature animation. And because I wanted to try it, because that was kind of where storyboarding began. And I wanted to see where I sort of lined up in the history of it all, you know? and so I asked Jeffrey if I could come by, and I met with his lieutenants there, Penny and Sandy, and got on Shrek. So I went from Lost World to 2 years on Shrek, and worked in feature animation. So I had some sense of how, and then others after that, Shrek 2 and a little bit on Sinbad and Madagascar, stuff like that. So I had a, you know, I had a sense of how animation works. So when John asked, you know, wanted to do that process with Jungle Book and with his other movies, I had an idea of how to do it. So, like you were saying, those parts, seeing which parts work or not. I did what we do in animation is you don't break it up by scenes per se. I broke it up in 30 parts, you know, so some would be a whole scene or a scene and a half or two scenes, and some would, you know, be half of a scene or something, you know, and so it's a way of organizing it in smaller bites, and not as small as scenes, but sections, you know. And so you can, you know, and we would draw those sections, all whatever, 28 or 30 of them. And
I mean, that's the stuff that you don't always get to know, like, you know, in all these like making of documentaries and everything, they always just talk about like just the special effects or just this and that, but they don't really ever go into like these kind of details, which is why I love, you know, talking about them. So that's great. So were you ever approached to even work on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom or its next movie coming out, Jurassic World Dominion? And would you have liked to?
I don't know. I guess I would have to have read the script. Like I said, the last one was a real kind of downer. And then like we were talking about the now what kind of factor with, you know, bringing the dinosaurs into the total warp and woof of SoCal or whatever, you know, sort of. I'm very curious how they make that work where it isn't, you know, Battle LA or something, you know.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned myself.
Bring the A-team up, bring the missiles. You know, it just becomes some thug battle where we can easily outnumber them. But wait, the dinosaurs all move underground. They find the secret tunnels under LA and come up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, Parmy's kind of like, you know, as long as they make the best movie that they want to make, that they actually have a passion for, and that will hopefully show in the final results.
Trevorrow's directing the next one, right?
Yeah, yeah, he came back to direct.
Well, I have great hope then, knowing that, yeah.
So of all the Jurassic Park films that you have worked on, like, did they turn out as well as you had hoped they would have, or did you think they fell short in any way? Like, were they disappointed at all?
You know, they all take so much work. The first one was so great. You know, it was my earliest time with Spielberg. You know, just by virtue of its dynamism and the level of invention, I think, like I said earlier, it changed movies forever in a way, you know, and you don't get many of those ever in your career to work on. So that was pretty, that was just really tremendous. And Lost World was, you know, again, it's that battle of the sequels, you know, where it's maybe not quite up to the par, because how could it ever, you know, have the invention of the first time, you know, the novelty and, you know, sheer sort of exhilaration of the first one. You'd be hard pressed to catch that in a bottle for the second one or the third one, you know. But the second one, the experience of being around the filmmaking process was awesome, and, you know, and made a lot out of what I, you know, where I went and what I became too, in a way. And the third one was a hell of a lot of fun, you know, with Joe it wasn't maybe as intrinsic as I would have wanted to be or whatever, but it was just great to catch up with Joe mostly and have that ride there. The Trevorrow one was in a way of, except for the first one, was like the biggest surprise, you know, and seeing it, the biggest treat in a way, because I thought it was great. I thought it was just like, man, did that guy, I mean, he came from nowhere, Colin did, and did he pull this off, you know. It was just brilliant, you know. With luck equals preparation and opportunity, you know, that's that right there. He was lucky because he was ready for it and could do it and did it, and that's pretty great, you know.
Inspiring
for him especially. Yeah. And fun to be a part of and to be around, you know.
Thank you so much for
Derek, this was fun. Thank you for being interested and passionate about it. I mean, this is what really makes it rewarding in the long run, you know, that it still lives for you and fans like, you know, like you know and are, and that's really it's really humbling and flattering, of course, you know. I talk big, but I was just a small part of all of it, so I'm glad you're interested to hear my small part. That's very nice, very nice of you.
I appreciate David Lowry for spending his time reminiscing about the Jurassic Park films and his illustrious career. And I hope you have enjoyed this engaging discussion. For the latest in Jurassic news, travel to the Jurassic Outpost, featuring its own unique web store and other exclusives. And if you'd like to learn more about the untold stories of Jurassic Park, please visit Jurassic Time, featuring John Hammond's memoir program, Rick Carter's illustrated audio drama, and much more. This has been Derek Davis.